The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from Wright Memorial Public Library, Clark County Public Library, Tipp City Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Washington Centerville Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McInnes. It's my pleasure to welcome to the program today Dermot Turing. He joins us on the telephone in the United Kingdom. Welcome to the program, sir.
Hello.
You are an amazing writer. I understand that you wrote a biography of your uncle called Prof.
Yes, that's right. For the benefit of your listeners, who I don't expect to understand my family tree, my uncle was Alan Turing, who's very famous over here, certainly, and I suspect reasonably well known where you are, predominantly for having worked at Bletchley Park during World War II, breaking German codes. So during his lifetime, of course, Bletchley Park was a secret, and so he was better known as a computer pioneer, but that's another story, I guess.
And you published a book a few years ago called X, Y, and Z, The Real Story of How Enigma Was Broken. And this is really a story in a great part about these Polish gentlemen who were code breakers, and I was not aware of this history. This is amazing. These guys were so crucial, and yet it's little known.
Well, what you have just said is essentially me deciding to research this story, because those of us who know a little bit about Enigma code breaking at Bletchley Park know that the British codebreakers were given a leg up in their endeavor by the Polish military intelligence department. And the nature of that leg up and what led to it and how come the Polish military intelligence folk of all people had got to a point where they could make a significant and probably, I think, world war changing contribution to code breaking. It was all very obscure. It was all sort of, to some extent, I think, buried under some sort of piece of sort of British pride in what we had done at Bletchley Park. And then, of course, the American contribution to Enigma codebreaking, that's reasonably well known as well, and that's sort of, if you like, the sequel to the Bletchley Park story. But what was the prequel? And I think it was really very hard to find out. There didn't seem to be anything, you know, I mean, this is kind of my approach to life. If you search for a book on a subject that interests you and you can't find one, then I'm afraid it's like it goes onto the to-do list. It becomes your problem. that's how I started.
Well, it's an amazing story. And of course, I love these Polish guys and their stories, but the spies involved in this are so crucial. And before we talk about these individuals, explain, some of our listeners probably don't know what Enigma was. What was Enigma?
Well, back at the end of World War One, the Germans had concluded that their World War One era codes and ciphers were pretty rubbish. They realized they were using essentially the same kind of techniques that all their enemies had been using during World War One, and they knew that these were all vulnerable. They were easy to break. So what they commissioned was a bunch of people, but notably one significant individual, to work on mechanizing the encipherment process to make it a lot more secure. What came out of that was a machine called Enigma, which had not just very complicated internal mechanism involving rotating parts, which would change the way that the cipher scrambled letters every single time you pressed a key on the keyboard to enter a new letter of your message. But it would also be able to be set up in literally millions. And when I say millions, I'm talking about millions of millions of millions of different ways every day, so as to better confound your opponent. It should have been unbreakable.
And these were just sounds that they heard on their radios that just sounded like garble?
Yeah, obviously the radio, if you're going to send a message over the radio in Morse code, anybody who happens to tune into the relevant wavelength will be able to pick up the Morse code message. So you have to encipher it if you're going to have any degree of security. And so, yes, what is being picked up by your opponent ought to be a seemingly random string of letters that have no meaning and no connection to each other. And so the question then is, what is it? What was the methodology that enabled a good sense piece of German text turn into that scrambled gobbledygook that you can pick up by listening into the Morse code transmissions?
Mm. Dermot Turing has joined us on the program, and we're talking about Enigma. And you mentioned the connection with America, and specifically, there's a connection with Dayton, Ohio, here in our area. People, of course, know about this. Your uncle came to America to advise the engineers, and on page 203 of your book, you mention, quote, "So the Americans, to be specific, Joe Dash, an engineer working at the National Cash Register Corporation, were going to use electronics to memorize the overshot stop position. Alan Turing went to visit Joe Dash and discuss his prototype." And it sounds like the Americans came up with a very fancy variant of it. Did you pronounce it the Bomba?
Yes, so the solution to the Enigma problem was a solution needed to work out which of the 150 million, million, million settings were being used every day. And the answer was to mechanize the search process for which setting had been used. And the machine that was used to do that process was called the BOM. And it was partly, and we'll probably come onto this later, Alan Turing's invention. By the time America came into the war, the German Navy was just poised to upgrade all its Enigma machines and add a fourth rotor to the encryption part of the device. And that, at a stroke, wiped out, made obsolete the bomb machines that Alan Turing had been responsible for at Bletchley Park. So on both sides of the Atlantic, because the Battle of the Atlantic was so crucial, I mean, there were all these merchant ships that were failing to reach their destinations because they were being torpedoed. It was imperative for both the Americans and the British to get on top of the signaling systems that were telling the U-boats where to go. And because if we knew where the U-boats were, then obviously we could route the convoys away from them and save the cargoes and, more importantly, save merchant seamen's lives. So the race was on to build an equivalent to the bomb machine that would cope with the four-rotor version of Enigma. And so Joe Desch started the process for the U.S. Navy, as you say, at the National Cash Register Corporation and in Dayton. And a bunch of British engineers were working on a sort of an equivalent parallel project over here in the UK. I'm not sure who got there first, but I think it's fair to say that Joe Desch's solution to the problem was very innovative because it used electronic components for the first time and it used them in a way to essentially save the result when the machine was running so fast that any mechanical device would have overshot the desired output because it had spinning wheels which couldn't be slowed down in time. So he had basically an electronic data capture system bolted onto his device, and it was very, very clever. And I'll put in a plug here, because the only surviving World War II era bomb machine in the entire world is located in the United States at the National Cryptologic Museum at Fort Meade, Maryland. So if anybody gets a chance to go over there, you can have a look at that thing. And it's sort of quite a remarkable thing, seeing it preserved in all its glory.
You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, community-owned public radio for curious listeners. I'm Vic McCunis, and this is the Book Nook, and I've been joined on the telephone in the United Kingdom by Dermot Turing. And the month of May is a special month. It's Codebreaker Month in Dayton, Ohio. And on May 8th, it will be the 80th anniversary of the end of the European War, World War II, VE Day. Nazi Germany finally surrendered. And a big part of the war was code breaking. And that's one reason why I'm interviewing Dermot Turing, because he knows a lot about it. He's written extensively about cryptology, and he will be in our area on the 80th anniversary coming up this Thursday for a couple of events. And these are open to the public. They're free, but you do need to register for them. You do need to let them know that you plan to attend so they have room for you. So I'm going to give you the information on these events. You need to write this information down. Okay, starting off on Thursday, May 8th at 11 o'clock that morning, that will be an appearance by Dermot Turing at the Dayton International Peace Museum. And it begins at 11 a.m. and ends at 2 o'clock. That's at 10 North Ludlow Street. And it's Partnering for Peace, World War II and Beyond. And this will consist of a panel discussion. And the panelists will be Dermot Turing, also Dr. Vaughn Shannon, Dr. Renata Friedman, and Jeff Kempton. And Renata is a Holocaust survivor and educator. Vaughn Shannon is with the Wright State Political Science Department, and Jeff Kempton is Wright State lecturer and also an analyst at Wright-Patterson. And this will be a panel discussion, and then Dermot will be signing copies of this book that we're discussing on the program today, X, Y, and Z, The Real Story of How Enigma Was Broken. And the conversation will certainly be in large part about the code breaking that went on in Dayton, Ohio, led by Joseph Desch at NCR back in the 1940s during the war. And then that evening, there will be another event. And I first need to give you information on how you can participate at the Peace Museum event. And the way you do that is you can call them at 937-227-3223. Or you can send an email to info@daytonpeacemuseum.org, or you can go to their website at peacemuseum.org, click on events, and you can register that way to attend. So if you go to their website at peacemuseum.org and click on events, that'll bring up that page where you can RSVP. And that evening, Thursday, May 8th, we will have a point-counterpoint discussion at Carillon Historical Park. And this will be Dermot Turing and Jim DeBrosse, who is the author of The Secret in Building 26. That was over at the NCR campus. And this discussion will be followed with a Q&A at Carillon Historical Park. That's at 7 p.m. on May 8th, Thursday, the 80th anniversary of VE Day, Jim DeBrosse and Dermot Turing having a conversation, and you can attend that. Here's how you register for that. You need to register so they know that you're arriving there. The number is 937-293-2841. That's 937-293-2841, extension 220. Or You can email esemmons at daytonhistory.org. That's E-S-E-M-M-O-N-S. I know this is a lot of information, but that's what we're here for, to put you in touch with the information about this event, a big event on the 8th, two big events, and Dermot Turing coming all the way from the UK. Apparently, he's working on another book about cryptology, and he's going to be doing some research in the Washington, D.C. area. So he's also going to stop by Dayton, and we'll continue our conversation with Sir Turing right after this. The Book Nook continues on WYSO. I've been joined on the telephone by Dermot Turing. We're talking about his book, X, Y, and Z, The Real Story of How Enigma Was Broken. Do you think we might have lost that war if it weren't for this code breaking?
It's very difficult to say. I mean, counterfactuals are challenging, but what we do know is that it was by the skin of our teeth that we succeeded over here in the Battle of Britain, when Britain was the only uninvaded Allied power that was still fighting against the Germans. And we know that Enigma codebreaking played a crucial, it was very small, but a crucial role in helping win that battle and avoiding the capitulation of the UK following on like dominoes from the continental European powers. So that's one. And then secondly, we were talking about the Battle of the Atlantic a minute ago. I think that that conflict, again, the U-boats were basically winning. If you look at the graph that shows merchant shipping losses in 1942 and the first part of 1943, they were rising on a sort of like an exponential scale. If it hadn't been for the ability to read the Enigma messages that were telling the U-boats where to go, we would have lost that battle, and the consequences for example, ferrying American servicemen across the Atlantic to fight Germany in Europe and in North Africa, the consequences, I think, would have been very difficult to map out. So whether we would have lost, I don't know, but it would certainly have made the conflict last an awful lot longer.
If you're just tuning in, my guest is Dermot Turing. He joins us on the phone in England, and I assume you're in England, and the book is X.
I'm actually in Scotland.
Oh, okay.
We won't hold that against our American friends.
Good. He's in Scotland. Edinburgh, by any chance?
Not far. I'm about 50 miles from Edinburgh.
Okay, great. I think the last guy I talked to in Scotland was Sir Ian Rankin.
Oh, very good.
I love Ian. Dermot, there's so much wonderful history in this story, and a lot of our listeners, I'm sure, are not aware of the conflict, the centuries-long conflict between Poland and Russia and Poland and Germany. I think that the Poland-Russia thing goes back to Catherine the Great, and a lot of people aren't aware of that war in 1920 between Poland and Russia. And this is some fascinating backstory to all this history. I loved reading about this.
Yes. So I think we can trace the birth of Polish skill in codebreaking back to that conflict. And again, I mean, those of us who are not close to Polish history may need reminding that Poland as a nation state hadn't been allowed to exist until the end of World War One. So 125 years, Poland had not been an independent nation. It was carved up between the empires on its borders. So the emerging Polish nation that came into existence again in the end of 1918 was under serious threat from its previous occupying powers. And one of those threats materialized into a war with the Soviet, which again was a new state that had just sort of emerged at much the same time as Poland reemerged. And so there was basically a fight going on for whose territory it was. And Poland, quite surprisingly, won that war, and they won it with the aid of some code breaking. Russian codes were not very good in 1919, 1920, and the Polish code breakers mastered it. And then they realized that actually code breaking was crucial to their own national security. And I think that that's where the whole Enigma code breaking story has its origins, its roots.
Well, that's amazing. These spies, they were so lucky that they had spies that were helping them out. And there were a couple that I really loved reading about. One was a guy who went by the name of Rex, and I love this photo you have of him. And then the other guy that I think is, without this guy, they never would have figured this out, Hans Thilo Schmidt.
Yes. I mean, so this is something that I hadn't really expected. I thought I was researching something about, you know, essentially mathematics and code breaking and your technology. Turns out that it's all about people doing classic sort of John le Carré style spycraft, where they're meeting in clandestine hotels in neutral countries and drinking brandy and smoking cigars, and people are doing safe raids to get hold of secret documents, and they're smuggling them across the border in rucksacks full of stinky garlic sausage and stuff. I mean, the whole spy story around this is just, first of all, it's hilarious, and secondly, it's really good fun, and it adds quite a lot of color and amusement to what might have, you know, possibly been a bit of a dry story. Yeah, so we got some very, as you say, some very colorful characters. Rex is a great guy. He's German born, brought up in France, so he's bilingual. He then finds himself doing all kinds of crazy stuff in Spain and Argentina, basically undermining governments and generally behaving badly, gets himself slung out of casinos across Europe for cheating. So that's what he does until he reaches retirement age. And then when you're a retired gambler and crook, what do? You report for duty at the French intelligence service, and they gave him a retirement job, which was essentially to vet the bona fides of walk-in spies from Germany. I mean, you couldn't make it up. I mean, it's really quite incredible. This guy's CV is, I mean, frankly, if it wasn't true, you wouldn't believe it.
I'm amazed they actually have a photo of him. It kind of looks like a mugshot, though.
It is a mugshot. So the one that's in the book, I mean, there are quite a few photos of him, but the one that's in the book is a passport mugshot, yeah.
My guest is Dermot Turin, and Dermot has a book called X, Y, and Z, The Real Story of How Enigma Was Broken. Another really lucky break involved a U-boat in the Mediterranean that was spotted, and this is the biggest lucky break that they had, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes, well, the problem with Enigma, as I explained earlier, was that it could be set up in so many different ways. You had to know what the setup protocol was, and to be able to do that, you could either do that through code breaking, and that was very, very painful. Or you could try and get a quick way in, which was to steal one of the books that basically the U-boat captains were using to inform themselves about how to set up the machine for receipt and transmission of signals. There was a problem with this because the Germans, not being stupid people, had printed these books of settings on a special form of pink. It's like blotting paper, for those of you who remember blotting paper. It's like pink paper that would have the information printed on it in red ink that was soluble in seawater. So that as soon as a U-boat came under attack or thought it was going to be boarded, what would happen is that they'd chuck this book over the side, and of course all you'd end up with is, you know, essentially a soggy a bundle of tissue paper, which is no use to anybody. So to try and capture these settings books, they're called bigram tables, but that's essentially what they were, was an extremely challenging task. But in the Mediterranean, there was a U-boat that came under attack from some British surface craft, and they managed to damage the U-boat so that it didn't sink, or at least it didn't sink immediately, and then boarded it and got hold of a copy of this pink document with the text still intact on it, hadn't got wet yet, and managed to spirit it back to Bletchley Park. It didn't win the war, but what it did was it sped up the process of finding the relevant Enigma settings. And once you've found them for 1 month, it becomes a lot easier to find them for the next month and so forth and so forth. So it just accelerated the whole code-breaking process. Very, 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 not entirely fortuitous, but very happy eventuality, except for the poor guys who boarded the U-boat, which then took a big gulp and sank very suddenly with them still on board, but after they had handed over the crucial document.
Yes, the Germans had scuttled it. It just wasn't sinking fast enough, and that's when they boarded
it. Yeah, it wasn't sinking fast enough.
That is an amazing story. And there are so many amazing stories in this book by Dermot Turing, The Real Story of How Enigma Was Broken. And in Dayton, Ohio, it is Codebreaker Month, and I know some of you were not able to write down all the information that I provided on that first break, so we're going to give it to you again on these events, because Dermot Turing is coming to Dayton and will be here on the 80th anniversary of VE Day. That is this Thursday, May 8th. And there are two events open to the public, but you need to register to attend. The first one is at 11 o'clock on Thursday, May 8th, 11 a.m. at the Dayton International Peace Museum from 11 until 2 o'clock at 10 North Ludlow Street. And to attend, you need to go to their website at peacemuseum.org, click on events, and you can RSVP there, or you can call them at 937-227-3223. And there will be a panel discussion that day with Dermot Turing, Dr. Vaughn Shannon, Dr. Renata Friedman, and Jeff Kempton. And he will have books there, Dermot will, that he'll be signing later at the end of the panel discussion. And that's at the Dayton International Peace Museum, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Thursday, May 8th. You need to register to attend, please. It's free, but they want to know how many people to expect. And then 7 o'clock that evening, there will be a point-counterpoint discussion at Carillon Historical Park. Jim DeBross, the author of The Secret in Building 26, will be there with Dermot Turing, and they will have their books, and you can register by calling this number, 937-293-2841. That's 937-293-2841, extension 220. That's how you can get on the list to attend at Carillon Historical Park at 7 p.m. The Book Nook will continue right after this. You're listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. I've been joined on the telephone by Sir Dermot Turing. His book is X, Y, and Z, The Real Story of How Enigma Was Broken, and May is Codebreaker Month in Dayton, Ohio. I am guessing that you are very well liked in Poland.
This is true. Well, at least I have many Polish friends. So the Polish government were very kind enough to give me a formal recognition of my contribution to Polish history, which was very gracious of them. So I'm very, very proud of that. But, yes, you're right.
You never knew your uncle, Alan Turing.
But you
must feel like you know him because you studied him and researched him and wrote his biography. Do you want to talk about him some more? Do you want to tell us more about him?
Perhaps just to say this, those of you who are Hollywood fans will probably have seen a movie called The Imitation Game starring Benedict Cumberbatch, who does a great job of acting. I just encourage those of you who have seen the movie to enjoy it for what it is, which is a Hollywood movie, and not imagine that you're watching a documentary on the History Channel, because it does deviate in a number of respects from what was a good enough story to not need any Hollywood embellishment, but never mind. So you get a sort of slightly weird picture about what Alan Turing's character was like, and you get a very weird picture about what Bletchley Park was like, and you get a slightly over-dramatized version of the code-breaking conflicts during World War II. None of that's to say it's a terrible movie. Quite the opposite. It's a brilliant movie, but it's a movie. And I would just say, so if you want to find out about the real Alan Turing, you kind of need to roll up your sleeves, pull up a chair by the fire and read a book.
Okay. Well, these guys, these code breakers, men and women, were geniuses. And to read about how these Polish code breakers were able to reverse engineer these machines, and they actually were manufacturing their own variants and versions of them. It's just incredible to even conceive of this.
This is where we do get into some higher level mathematics, but this is where the Poles were streets ahead of any of their competitors in Europe in the late 1920s and early 1930s. They realized that you needed mathematicians to be able to solve code-breaking problems. It's probably obvious to us now, 100 years on, but then it wasn't. People thought that code-breaking was essentially something that required linguistic skills. And so to hire mathematicians and put them on the Enigma problem was very insightful. And the mathematicians they put on it, they happened to pick some really good guys. I mean, they put them through some kind of formal assessment process before choosing who was actually going to be let loose on this secret project. But they picked them very well. And one of the mathematicians, a guy called Marian Rievsky, instantly spotted that the problem that he was confronted with was essentially a manifestation of what he'd been taught as an undergraduate in his mathematics course at Poznan University. And so he basically turned the Enigma structure problem, you know, how is this machine wired up and how does it work, into a set of equations. And then when you've seen the equations, you think, oh my goodness, how on earth do you actually solve stuff like that? He sat down and solved them. And by solving them, he could actually work out what the wiring was in each of the rotors in the Enigma machine and in the machine's static structure that connected up the keyboard to the rotors and so forth. So, I mean, you know, it was a brilliant piece of work. There is a parallel, though, and while I'm talking to an American audience, I'd like to mention this. It's a very similar kind of intellectual exercise to the one that was done by Frank Rolette and his team at the Signal Intelligence Service for the U.S. Army when they broke the famous Japanese Purple machine just before World War II. So both of these are, how do we reverse engineer a machine that we've never actually seen? We know what it does. We've got to figure out how it does it. And that those two achievements, I think, very, very remarkable. The two of the three top code-breaking achievements of the sort of Second World War era.
My guest has been Dermot Turing, and we've been talking about The Code Breakers and his book X, Y, and Z, The Real Story of How Enigma Was Broken. And you mentioned talking to an American audience. You've been doing that on the radio, and we have had this opportunity because you are going to be physically here in our area talking to American audiences during the marking of the 80th anniversary of VE Day. I assume you've been to Dayton before?
I have not, so this will be a first time for me. I get to, in a very muted kind of way, follow in the footsteps of my famous ancestor and his visit to Dayton, but it will be very good to do that.
Well, I know that there's a lot of people in our region who are excited about having you be here, and especially in Oakwood, where Joe Dash, I believe he lived in Oakwood, and of course, we're very proud of the Codebreakers here, along with the Wright brothers. Those are a couple of our real historical figures that we're proud of.
Indeed.
And thank you so much for calling in to us, and I'm looking forward to meeting you when you're in Dayton.
Well, thank you very much for having me, and I'm looking forward to being with you all.
My guest has been Dermot Turing, and I've got your information on his appearances, and I'll be sharing that with our listeners. Thank you so much for everything, and the book, again, is X, Y, and Z, The Real Story of How Enigma Was Broken. And you've been listening to the Book Nook on WYSO, and that was Sir Dermot Turing joining us on the telephone in Scotland to talk about his book, which came out a few years ago. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis. Thanks, as always, for tuning in.